Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, my name is David Karp. I represent the appellant, Michael LePage. This case presents the question of whether the police have reasonable suspicion to effectuate a stop when they have information from an informant that a suspect has a gun, but the informant tells the police she hasn't seen a gun, and the informant cannot give a reason why. She believes that the person has a gun. As the magistrate put in his recommendation report in this case, the informant was right, but for the wrong reasons. The information that the informant gave the police did not provide reasonable suspicion that Michael LePage had a firearm. The informant here was named, but nonetheless it was a bare-bones accusation of possession of a firearm. It was simply not sufficient. This even in a named informant, this sort of practice is open for all sorts of abuse where one neighbor wants to make trouble for another by making...
Forgive me, but the tip detailed potentially criminal activity. It's that, you know, that someone's trying to break into a car in the alley, and a large number of people were circling the block, and a light appeared to be on in a vacant apartment. You know, she identified herself. She provided her address. That's, you know, that adds to the reliability. And
Judge Rovner, the tipster contradicts herself. First she says, oh, they're trying to break into a car. Then she tells the dispatcher, oh, no, it's their car. She identifies the car, a Toyota, one of the people who was accompanying Michael LePage was driving that Toyota. The informant says there's 8 or 9 people around. The police show up, there are 3, not 8 or 9. The informant...
How long did it take the police to get there?
They were there within minutes. Now, the police effectuated a stop. They saw Michael LePage. He'd been traveling towards his girlfriend's house, up the stairs, onto the porch. An officer says, drop your bag and come here to me. Now, LePage terminates his direction of travel at that point. That is when the stop is effectuated. He hesitated a bit before dropping the bag.
And then the sound, of course, causes the police to examine the bag, and they discover the gun.
They do. But the stop was effectuated before he dropped the bag. He was the one nearest towards the door of his girlfriend's house on the porch, and he did not continue in the direction of the house, and he did not flee, which distinguishes this case from cases such as Quinn and Hadari, where you have a confrontation confront suspects usually in a public place, and there's some evasive action that the suspects take. That didn't happen in this case. LePage complies, so he is stopped at that point based on the bare bones tip about the gun. If the court has no further questions about that, I'll turn to the sentencing issue.
Claim then that the stop was improper to begin with?
The stop was improper to begin with, yes, because the informant told the dispatcher she hadn't seen a gun, and she's obviously conferring with other people while she's conversing with the dispatcher, and nobody can give a reason that they believe that Mr. LePage is carrying a gun. So again, it turns out the tip is correct, but for the wrong reasons. Nothing that was known to the police, communicated to the police at the time, justified a reasonable suspicion that Mr. LePage was armed.
Well, you would agree he had a reasonable suspicion once LePage refused his command several times, right?
Well, my position is that
heard the thud.
Yes, Judge Wood. My position is the stop was effectuated before that, mm-hmm. Because a stop is a stop. Where someone's traveling in a certain direction and then travel is terminated, that's a stop, and that's what happened. If I'm carrying my briefcase into the courtroom and a police officer tells me stop, or he tells me drop your briefcase, I might be a bit nervous of that situation. I might hesitate. And LePage certainly hesitated, but he eventually complied. He didn't commit any act that was not in compliance with the show of authority from the time the police spoke to him. But the stop actually starts when he breaks his direction of travel.
Okay. All right.
There was the district court enhanced the sentence here in part, finding that Mr. LePage had possessed the shotguns in connection with drug dealing. I'd like to stress that the government, in a case like this, where it's an accusation of a gun toter, would have the burden of showing that there was, in fact, a connection between the gun possession and the drug dealing. There's an insufficient basis to do that here. Certainly the proximity of a firearm to drugs is strong evidence of the connection, but it's not in and of itself sufficient. The government has to show that the possession of the firearm would be more than coincidental to the accusation of drug dealing. The shotgun that LePage was carrying in a duffel bag had some horse supplement in it that could be used as a cut for methamphetamine. In the car, in which there was another shotgun in the trunk of the car, in the passenger compartment, there were small quantities of methamphetamine totaling 3 grams, which could be for use, could be for dealing. The quantities that are sold are the quantities that are typically bought. The record before the court does not show that, in fact, the government met its burden of showing that the gun's purpose and effect was to facilitate drug dealing. If the court has no questions, I'd like to reserve my remaining time.
Thank you. Thank you. Rumbelow.
Good morning, Your Honors. Rita Rumbelow for the United States. In this case, Jennifer Swanson called the Superior Police Department on August 23, 2005. She identified herself. She indicated where she was. She provided specific, detailed information. She knew Michael LePage. She said she saw him in this alleyway. To her, his activity was suspicious. The police arrived shortly thereafter. Officer Todd Moss knew Michael LePage from past prior professional contacts, knew he was a convicted felon, and Jennifer Swanson said, although I don't see a gun, he has a gun. Based upon that and that alone, that was enough suspicion to stop LePage. He was outside. He wasn't in his house. They didn't even have to pull him over in a car. He was outside. They approached him. Please stop. Put down your duffel bag. That was a very de minimis intrusion. Then what flowed after that? We all know Terry stops are very fluid. Mr. LePage hesitated several times, would not drop the duffel bag, and then, of course, once he did, there's the thud. So there's definitely reasonable suspicion in this case to then approach the duffel bag and look into it. And it was, plain view, it was half-zipped. That is, not contested. So when Mr. LePage contends that it was unlawful or the police had absolutely no suspicion based solely on Jennifer Swanson's tip to even approach Mr. LePage and ask him to stop, and that's just not true. In DeBerry, United States versus DeBerry, an anonymous tipster called the police and said, standing on a public street corner is an individual dressed like this and they have a gun. This court found reasonable suspicion. The officer found that particular person dressed like the anonymous tipster described on that public street corner. But then when the officer approached that person, just like Officer Moss did with Michael LePage, it's nothing than an approach, that individual made a gesture that led the officer to believe he was in fact armed, and this court upheld that case. Just like in Broomfield, in United States versus Broomfield in 2005, this court held that a brief stop where an officer instructed a defendant to take his hands out of his pockets did not rise to the level of a seizure under the Fourth Amendment and was not governed by Terry. So again, the initial approach of Michael LePage was just based upon the information by Jennifer Swanson, and that under the fluidity of the Terry stop, the officer, with Michael LePage's refusal to drop the duffel bag and then the thud, there was reasonable suspicion, and so there were no violation at all whatsoever in this case of Michael LePage's Fourth Amendment rights. As for the four-level enhancement under 2K2.B15 of the guidelines, there was sufficient evidence in the record for the district court to conclude by a preponderance of the evidence that Michael LePage possessed two stolen firearms in connection with another felony offense, that being possession with intent to distribute methamphetamine. There was uncontested information in the pre-sentence investigation report that only a month prior to this, Michael LePage delivered methamphetamine to a controlled, in a controlled buy to a confidential informant. So there was sufficient evidence in the record to prove that LePage distributed methamphetamine. And then this on August 23rd, they located, you know, more methamphetamine in the car with which he had just been driving, more guns. He had the cutting agent in the same duffel bag as the sawed-off shotgun. Again, by preponderance of the evidence, the district court did not err in concluding that this enhancement applied. Same for the number of firearms. Mr. LePage contests the district court's conclusion that he was responsible for five firearms. Mr. LePage admitted in a non-protected statement that he participated in a burglary in which all five firearms were taken only days prior to this incident. And under Santoro and the law of this circuit, those firearms are also properly attributed to Mr. LePage at sentencing.
Well, didn't he also say that when he agreed to steal the guns, he thought that the guns would be sold and they'd split the profits? And doesn't that kind of cut against your argument that he would use the guns in connection with drug trafficking?
No, because he knew that some of the guns were going to be sold, Your Honor. And what happened was he participated in the burglary. He was the driver. He and his friends transported the firearms to another friend's house. Several days later, he was allowed to go back and pick out the guns of his choosing. And he chose the sawed-off shotgun, to which he pled guilty to possessing, as well as the other long gun that was located in Patricia Vig's car that night. So although some of the guns were to be sold, not all of them were sold. He had his pick of the loot. And so then he armed himself with the sawed-off shotgun and the other rifle. And again, that was in connection with his drug dealing activities.
Well, the deal actually went down a month before, though. He had selected the guns, right?
Yes. But again, that evening, he had the cutting agent with him. He had other individual packages of methamphetamine in the car. There was no paraphernalia associated with the ingestion of methamphetamine located in the car. And I think, again, on a preponderance of the evidence standard, the fact that he had distributed methamphetamine a month prior to that indicate his willingness and probability that he possessed those narcotics with intent to distribute them on August 23, 2005. And then finally, there was absolutely nothing improper about Judge Shabazz sentencing Mr. LePage to 120 months in prison. The defendant argues that he didn't really get the benefit for pleading guilty because he didn't get a sentence below the statutory maximum. And that argument just has absolutely no merit. Judge Shabazz, this guideline range was restricted. It should have been 110 to 137 months. Judge Shabazz expressed on several times during the sentencing hearing that he wished he could have sentenced Michael LePage to a greater sentence. So that argument just doesn't have any merit. And I ask this court to affirm the judgment and conviction order of the district court. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Denblow. Mr. Karp, how much time? You have 2 minutes, Mr. Karp.
Your Honors, a reasonable suspicion has to amount to more than a hunch. Again, the tip turned out to be right, but simply for the wrong reasons. And neither is a Terry stop so de minimis where someone is traveling in a certain direction and then has to interrupt their travel that does compromise Fourth Amendment rights. The stop cannot be justified by the later thud. That is a fact the police learn after the stop. They can't use the fact that they found a gun in the bag either to justify the stop. It has to be facts they know at the time of the stop. Quinn is distinguished because in Quinn you have a group of people standing in a high drug area. Someone throws a bag of drugs on the ground. They all scatter in different directions. So Mr. Quinn is apprehended. He puts his jacket against the police car, makes a sound, but at that point that simply justifies continuing the stop. It doesn't justify the stop, its inception, and it certainly doesn't justify a stop that occurred earlier that the police hear the thud on the porch after LePage drops the bag. With regard to the four-level enhancement, the sale of a small quantity of methamphetamine that occurs a month before the arrest in this case, there's no allegation that an arm was involved, so the government really cannot rely on that to show that the guns were to facilitate the drug dealing. And in fact, these guns couldn't have been used because they weren't stolen from their rightful owner until after the earlier incident. Lastly, with regard to the lack of any tangible benefit for acceptance of responsibility, a maximum sentence was unreasonable in this matter. When there's a maximum sentence, it simply is the maximum of the guidelines as well, and it simply is not in judicial economy to deny defendants the benefit of having accepted responsibility and given up the right to trial. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Mr. Karp, you were appointed to represent your defendant in this case.
I had an honor, Judge.
Thank you, and we certainly appreciate your efforts on his regard. Thank you very much. Thanks to both counsel. The case will be taken under advisement. The court will be in recess until tomorrow morning.